From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If you're thinking about witches today on Halloween, you may still have the old pointy black hat and cauldron in mind. Keep up! That's the witch of yesteryear. For some, the witch now has become a feminist symbol of power and independence. Women embracing a kind of witchiness, not just on Halloween, as a posture of empowerment. This hour on Point, Witchy Ways 2017. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you make of the remake, the reboot, the embrace by some of the witch? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We have looked at witches in many ways. Horrifying, scary, creepy, you know, must be burned or stoned or put on trial, and sometimes just charming. Back in the 1960s, the show Bewitched, main character, Samantha, she's a witch. She and her husband, Darren, driving in a rainstorm. Car runs out of gas. Even though Sam, played by Elizabeth Montgomery, promised to take a break from casting spells, she makes an exception all by waving her finger to cast that spell.
Honey, couldn't you make this one exception?
I promise, no more spells.
Sam?
Would half a spell do?
Half a spell?
Now try it.
Ah, spell cast, car turns on and off they go. There's the cute witch. Of course, it hasn't all been cute. There's been a lot of rough stuff when it comes to women who've been called witches through history. Here's comedian Shannon Coffey posted a video on YouTube last year about why women are called witches. Here's her take.
You're probably going to get called a witch if you're a woman, you're younger than dead, have an opinion, older than a baby, or if you just don't constantly smile.
Hey, a little anger about the whole witch label, but others are just plain embracing it right now. Joining me from New York is Constance Grady, culture writer for Vox, who's been writing about waves of interest in and maybe a redefinition of the witch. You can link to her piece, Lord is the celebrity avatar of pop culture's witch obsession, at our website, onpointradio.org. Constance Grady, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Tom.
Hi. So you're writing specifically here about the pop singer Lord, but you're talking about the pop culture's witch obsession. What do you mean? Tell us about it. I'm not in that realm of pop culture normally.
Oh, sure. So this is a new wave of witch obsession that's kind of different from the obsession we saw in the 90s with movies like The Craft and TV shows like Charmed and Buffy. In this case, there aren't a ton of specific literal witches on TV and in the movies. Okay. Occasionally, you get something like The Love Witch from last year. But mostly, this obsession is about an aesthetic and a power fantasy. So you have someone like Lord who dresses in black lace and wears dark lipstick and will say things like, I'm basically a witch. I think at one point she started calling Taylor Swift's Girl Squad a coven. Or you have someone like Lana Del Rey.
Taylor Swift, that group of stars.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Taylor Swift has her whole posse of friends that she calls her Girl Squad. Mm-hmm. She would not call it a coven, probably. Mm-hmm. You have someone like Lana Del Rey who tweets out instructions for putting a binding spell on Donald Trump. Or you have like an episode of Broad City where they start talking about embracing their inner witchiness. Right now, the witch obsession is less about any one specific image of the witch and more a kind of an aesthetic, an ethos, an attitude.
You're right when it comes to Lorde, who's sort of the avatar of this right now in celebrity culture. You're right. She stands for the fantasy that this aesthetic represents. Quoting you here, a female power without objectification, of the freedom to be angry, of ironic detachment from the rest of the world. So Lorde's the main one playing that out now? She's the sort of pop culture focal point?
I don't think you could say that she's the main one or the only one. I think that she embodies it particularly well in the sense that her witch aesthetic gives her a freedom from caring about certain things. You know, one of the things that people make fun of with Lorde is that when she dances, she kind of looks like she's doing spells, or she says at one point that she looks like Gollum. She doesn't dance in a way that's sexually appealing or really there for the male gaze. And because her whole aesthetic is about being witchy and not about being sexy or pretty or, you know, hyper feminine, that's okay. She's not violating any part of her image mm-hmm. and her appeal to the rest of the world.
You write in your recent piece, Constance, that the witch aesthetic emerged as a simultaneous evolution from and backlash against the aesthetic of weaponized femininity. Explain that.
So weaponized femininity is this aesthetic that was very popular, I think especially on Tumblr and websites like that that cater to younger women coming out of the late aughts and the early 2010s. The idea of weaponized femininity is that you can take this hyper-feminine image and turn it into something that cuts. So like the classic iconic image would be the beautiful lady spy putting on poisoned lipstick and then knocking someone out with a kiss. Or, you know, speaking of Taylor Swift, basically everything that happens in her blank space video where she's immaculately dressed in beautiful gowns with red nail polish and sort of using that image to destroy men would be an example of weaponized femininity.
Okay. And how is this sort of obsession, as you put it, with witchiness an evolution away from? How is it an embrace of?
So weaponized femininity is a power fantasy of its own, right? The idea is that you can take all of these images that have been pushed on you as a woman that say that this is what you're supposed to be and turn them into a weapon against the system, which is part of why people were embracing it so hard. But there was this critique of weaponized femininity that starts to emerge in the early 2010s, which says that, first of all, this is working within the system, not breaking it down. Second of all, it is exclusively for people who represent their gender as being high femme, which is exclusive of other people, maybe women who want to represent in a more masculine mm-hmm. or non-binary mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. Third of all, it's tends to be pretty white. There's not a lot of room for women of color in the traditional weaponized femininity trope. And as it happens, this backlash starts to emerge right about the time that the 90s revival is really taking off. So the witch revival is kind of embedded in the 90s revival, right? That's when you have nostalgia for Hocus Pocus and The Craft and Buffy. Mm-hmm. So as the young women who are thinking about these things and talking about these things a lot start to turn against weaponized femininity, but still want a way to imagine being powerful specifically as a woman, the witch fantasy represented by the 90s revival gives them a way into that. You can still be powerful and you can still be feminine, but this time the power that the witch fantasy represents is breaking down the oppressive structure, not working within it.
Constance Grady, you're writing about all this in Vox, thinking about Taylor Swift in her Blank Space video. Remember that lyric there, "Darling, I'm a nightmare, dressed like a daydream," weaponized mm-hmm. femininity being performed there, you write. Or Lord, and we'll hear a little bit of this, but from her Yellow Flicker beat, it gets more witchy. Her lyric, you quote here, "I got my fingers laced together and I made a little prison and I'm locking up everyone who ever laid a finger on me." You say she's performing witch aesthetics.
Exactly. It's less about any image of, you know, Margaret Hamilton in her green makeup and her pointy hat cackling, and more about the idea of turning on the structure that has oppressed you and ripping it to little pieces.
It's the fantasy, Constance Grady writes, of finding, and I love that name, it's got a kind of a Salem sound to it, sorry, but it's the fantasy of finding an escape hatch from the things the world demands of women, the enforced prettiness and sweetness and sexual availability, and turning the rejection of those tropes into power. That's the power fantasy at the bottom of the witch aesthetic, and that's the power fantasy that Lord embodies. Do you feel it resonating, Constance?
Absolutely. I think that that's part of why we're seeing so much of witch imagery in political protests right now. You know, there are women showing up in witch gear to the Women's March and sort of culminating most recently in that great editorial by Lindy West in The New York Times that said, "Yes, this is a witch hunt. I am a witch and I am hunting you."
I mean, some of it's an aesthetic or imagery, but we've got people calling up, and I'll come to them, who are calling in and saying, mm-hmm. "Hey, it's not just an aesthetic. I'm a witch."
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of people who practice witchcraft and who are practicing Wiccans, and for them, it's a religion and a very serious spiritual practice. which I think is a very important and vital practice, but is definitely separate from the witch aesthetic that you see figures like Lord and Lana Del Rey practicing, which is more less spiritual and more of a lifestyle ethos.
What do you make of the whole thing? Is this the patriarchy losing its grip as witchiness becomes more evident in the popular culture?
I mean, I think it would be really nice if dressing up like a witch meant that the patriarchy was going to crumble, but I don't necessarily see that happening. I think this is more just a coping mechanism for dealing with the patriarchy. We're living in a time when a lot of women are very angry and expressing that anger. You know, we're seeing a lot of women turning on very powerful men who have, we're seeing now, successfully use their systemic power to allegedly harm a whole lot of women, as we're seeing with, you know, the Harvey Weinstein case and the sort of echo effect coming out of that.
The whole Me Too movement may touch in here. Constance Grady, it's so great to have you with us, culture writer for Vox. Please stand by there in New York. When we return, Alice Hoffman is with us, author of the best-selling Practical Magic and the new The Rules of Magic. She's dipped in here very effectively, compellingly. Behind us right here, Lord, with yellow flicker beat, what she calls her goth witch vibe. I'm Tom Ashbrook on Halloween. This is On Point.
This podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter. What if hiring could be easier? So even when you're busy, you can still be smart about how you hire. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 top job boards with just one click. Then their smart technology notifies the most qualified candidates to apply. No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. Right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/OP. That's ZipRecruiter.com/OP. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about women embracing witchiness. Not the Halloween witch of children's tales, but something more welcome and empowering, female empowering. Constance Grady is with us, culture writer for Vox. Alice Hoffman, the novelist, joins us in just a moment. You can join us this hour as well. Do you get this? Have you heard it, seen it? Women saying, I'm not a princess. I'm more fierce. It's a deeper, darker energy. You can say, witch. And does witch mean to you cackling evil or malice? Do you understand why some women are embracing the word, giving the identity their own meaning of power, depth, an alternative femininity? And what do you think of this? Do you find it freaky, scary, appealing? Alice Hoffman is the author of Practical Magic and The Rules of Magic. Practical Magic, a big bestseller, and of course was made into the 1998 film with Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman. Here's a scene from the film, iconic scene from the 1998 film version of Practical Magic. Frances and Jet Owens, sisters here, making margaritas with a witchy sense of humor.
I am Newt, and toe of frog, will of bat, tongue of dog. Adder's fork and blind worm's sting. Barbados lime is just the thing. Fregger's sword like a sailor's stubble. Flip the switch and let the cauldron bubble.
Okay, and they've got margaritas. Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman playing right there. Alice Hoffman, author of Practical Magic, and now The Rules of Magic, the prequel, joins me in the studio. Alice Hoffman, it's so great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
You've been playing with these icons and ideas for a long time now between Practical Magic and The Rules of Magic.
Yeah.
Do you see, in recent years or over decades, a kind of a growth in openness or an embrace more widely shared of women of some of these notions of the witch or witchiness?
I think it has changed. Excuse me.
That's an eye of Newt caught there.
I think it's changed a lot.
What do you think has brought this notion of witchiness into a more comfortable place in the hands and hearts of some in our culture?
Well, I know that, for instance, Practical Magic, which was about 20 years ago, has now become a cult film that people watch every Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is this feeling of sisterhood that is very hard to find in other places, and that the witch is really an iconic mythic figure. And there's no other figure like it, no princess, no queen. There's nothing the same as a witch. There's no female figure that has the strength of a witch. And I think now, at this time, politically, mm-hmm. it's a time, I think, when women are gathering together. There's a new kind of feeling of sisterhood. And I think what you said before, the whole Me Too,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, somebody clearly doesn't want me to talk about this.
Just lean away and have a good cough, if you will.
No, I'm good.
You're right?
Yeah.
Talk about how you sort of set up just very broadly, the plot lines in your two books. First, Practical Magic, and then the prequel. These sisters, this family, their yeah. origin story.
Yeah. Well, one thing about Practical Magic, which really pleases me, is that it was just Newsweek just did a poll to see what movie witches loved, and it was Practical Magic.
I saw that. Number one.
And I think it was because they are a regular family. They're a family with family problems. Mm-hmm. They're not just witches. They're real people.
But they've got a line of descent all the way from the witches of Salem. And,
yes.
And One Who Got Away is the story that you've woven.
Yes. And in The Rules of Magic, they're very involved in Nathaniel Hawthorne's family mm-hmm. because Nathaniel Hawthorne's ancestor was one of the judges at the Salem witch trials mm-hmm. and the one who never apologized, never said he was sorry. But I think there's this feeling right now, there's this feeling of witch hunts. And I think a lot of women have this feeling of wanting to bond together with sisters, with sisterhood.
Donald Trump says he's the target of a witch hunt right now. He uses the word very liberally.
Yeah, he does, but he's using it incorrectly, unfortunately. And I think it's always the outsider. And I think that women are often included in that outsider figure. And
so do your sisters identify as witches? Straight up?
They do.
And is it in the cutesy Elizabeth Montgomery Bewitched kind of sense, or is it in the where is it in the spectrum from that, which is kind of sugar and spice and witches are nice, to the sort of old children's fables, horrible, cruel,
twisted, eating children for supper, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think my witches are real people. I mean, if you want to think in terms of magic realism,
mm-hmm.
it's combining the two
mm-hmm.
of fantasy and myth with reality and everyday life.
You're listening, Constance. I don't know how deep into the Practical Magic or Rules of Magic realm you are, Alice Hoffman's creations, but how do you see her characters in this sort of a spectrum of notions of witchiness?
I think the really exciting thing about Practical Magic, which is such a wonderful story, is exactly what you're saying, that the witches are grounded in emotional realism. So they're normal people who can do magic. And the most important relationship that they have is their sisterly bond between each other, which is part, I think, of the appeal of the witch fantasy. You have the coven. You have this group specifically of women working together and being powerful together, which is part of what makes it so appealing.
And then we get into the way it's been seen. I mean, witches, in Salem, they tried and killed the witches because this was satanic. This was unacceptable. This was beyond the pale. What's your commentary on that,
Well,
Alice?
Those women were mostly women who were independent,
mm-hmm.
who had their own money, their own land,
mm-hmm.
who were old.
Historically, this is the case.
Historically, this is the case.
Mm-hmm. and that made them a threat to the order.
Yes. I mean, their property was taken,
mm-hmm.
and they were a threat. And very often, I love that term, emotional realism, mm-hmm. but very often there were women with power. There were midwives. They dealt with birth and death and medicine and folk medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very threatening to the, you know, to the patriarchy. I think they are the threatening women.
And now here we are at a time when, you know, there's a whole range of ways women are reacting to this and holding this, some just embracing an aesthetic, others going much further than that, saying, hey,
right,
I'm a witch.
Right.
Fran is calling. We've got a lot of callers here. Alice Hoffman, Please Stand By, author of Practical Magic and the Rules of Magic. Constance Grady, culture writer for Vox, with us from New York. Fran in Detroit, Michigan. Fran, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
What's your story, Fran?
Well, you are speaking to a real witch. I've been a witch for 40 years.
What does it mean, Fran?
Witches are real people. We practice a real religion that is recognized by our government. Witches practice what is commonly known as the old religion. What witches practice predates Christianity by thousands of years. Yes, witches, we are the healers. We are the nurturers. We are the teachers in the community. That is what we do. Our religion is earth-based. So we revere nature. We give thanks to our gods and our goddesses. There are many different traditions in witchcraft. Not all witches are the same, and Wiccans are not witches necessarily. So some practice a Celtic tradition. I practice an Egyptian tradition. So we are very diverse, and what you see in the media, what is represented in film and television, is just a facsimile of what witches are and what we actually do.
So Fran, you're a 40-year witch, you say. So let me ask you. I mean, the traditional depiction is of something evil and angry. Is that your witchness?
That is, again, that is Hollywood, that is, you know, an image that has been perpetuated by the patriarch because originally, during the early days of Christianity, the church feared women. They feared witches. They feared us because they wanted pagans to convert to Christianity. So how are you going to do that? You're going to persecute those leaders in the pagan community, which were people like me, witches. So people who have the knowledge and the skill to heal, to lead and aid and assist. And very often witches had, you know, financial means in those early times. So you would persecute those people because you want to stamp out paganism and you want to replace it with Christianity. How do you do that? Halloween, for example. Halloween is really not what we practice today. What we practice is something called Hallows Eve or Samhain, which is basically this is the time of the year when the mundane world and the spirit world meet. This is the perfect time to reach out to your dead ancestors, to revere them, to acknowledge their existence, to celebrate their legacies. And this is the importance of Halloween to us.
Fran, may I ask you? You say you've been a witch for 40 years. Did you feel free to say that 40 years ago? Do you feel freer to say that now? Do you live openly as a witch in your neighborhood, in your society?
I live openly as an individual. You know, I don't have to.
I can hear that. I like that.
I don't have to walk around with a giant pentagram on my chest to be a witch. That's who I am. I was born this way. You know, I come from a long legacy of witches. So I am who I am. I don't have to prove it to anyone. And if you ask me, I will tell you. If you want me to explain it to you, I will explain it to you. But I value my privacy. There is certainly persecution in our community, in the workplace. Witches are discriminated against. Some have lost their jobs. Some have been harassed by their neighbors. This still occurs. You know, it's a lot like being black in 1950. You know, you can be out if you want to be out. You have the free, right to be out, but you have to prepare yourself and arm yourself for the repercussions of that.
Fran, I have never knowingly had a conversation with a witch before, and I've enjoyed my first one, as far as I know, with you, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you so much, Tom.
If I may, Alice Hoffman, Constance Grady, stand by. Laura's Whistler joins us right now from Mount Pleasant, Michigan, professor of the Department of Philosophy and Religion at Central Michigan University. Research focuses on the anthropology of religion and feminist theory. Forthcoming book, Religious Feminist Activist, Cosmologies of Interconnection. Laura's Whistler, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
What about this? The idea of the witch? Where does it come from in the first place? And do you see it coming into a place of more acceptance right now? If so, what does that mean? Why would that be?
Yeah, so the concept of the witch basically gets defined during early Christian missionizing, where there's a concern that all religions that aren't Christianity must be against Christianity, must be satanic. And so this category of heretic kind of opens up. And after a while, as Christianity becomes successful, there's less external manifestations of otherness to fight, like less people are identifying as non-Christian.
Yep.
And so you get this sort of the gaze turns inward, and there comes to be a concern, especially during the early modern period, that Christians aren't really Christians, or some Christians aren't good enough Christians.
Okay.
And heretic kind of morphs into this image of the witch, who's the enemy within the community that looks just like us, but secretly wishes us evil. And very quickly, that enemy within comes to have a woman's face. And so we get the sort of collapsing down of alterity and difference and otherness into women among us.
Well, then what do you make, Laurel, of the phenomena that Constance Grady describes in Vox, or that Alice Hoffman sort of plays so deliciously with in her books, Practical Magic, The Rules of Magic, of at this moment, and, you know, it's not brand new, but this, broadly speaking, this time in history of there being among some women a more open embrace, or at least playing with the whole persona, idea, even the thing itself.
Well, actually, since the beginning of contemporary feminism, so often when we look at feminism, we talk about it coming in waves. The first wave is the push for voting rights, for suffrage. The second wave reemerges in the 60s and 70s, and these days we're into the third wave and whatever is coming next. But even in that first wave among suffragists like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony, Matilda Joslyn Gage, 1893, publishes Women, Church, and State, in which she argues that witch hunts are basically this giant flair or metonym for the ways that women have always been persecuted and repressed by patriarchy. So even before the 20th century, we have women sort of turning to the witch hunts as an example of feminist repression or repression of women. And then it resurges in the late 70s. We've got people like Andrea Dworkin talking about the witch hunts as a form of women-hating. Mary Daly in gynecology talks about the witch hunts as goddess murder. And if we're thinking about the ways that witch hunts allow us to talk about patriarchal repression, then it makes a lot of sense that if you're trying to flip that repression back, if you're trying to push against patriarchal repression, then a really powerful way to signal that, to signal your allegiance and to signal your part in the resistance, is to take up the image of whatever is the scariest to the people in power. And historically, in the Christian patriarchal West, that has been witches.
Alice Hoffman, is that what you've been up to?
You know, I totally agree with her. I mean, I think I think it's even more ancient than that, because when I was doing research for a book I wrote called The Dove Keepers about ancient Judea, there was all this warnings not to have figures of the goddess, not to have to bake cakes to the goddess. I mean, I think I agree, and I think this repression is kind of timeless. And I think for me, it's also the beginning of literature.
the beginning of literature in what women?
Well, I think women telling stories to other women, secret stories, mm-hmm. the oral tradition mm-hmm. that couldn't be written down.
Boy, this is great, and we're going to dig right on in. Alice Hoffman, author of Practical Magic and the new The Rules of Magic. Please stand by. Constance Grady at Vox, Laurel Zwistler at Central Michigan University. We are talking about women embracing witchiness. Behind us right here, Florence and the Machine. Witch. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Brooke, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about women embracing witchiness, a little from Wicked right there. Of course, the Wicked Witch of the West turns into one of the most empowered witches in pop culture in that song, Idina Menzel singing. We are looking at not the Halloween witch of children's tales, but something more welcome to many lately, and empowering, female empowering. And you can join us in this hour. Do you get this? Was the whole dark portrayal of the witch a way to put down feminine power? Or is it still too dark for you, or kind of appealing? Here's a little bit. Last year, the website Refinery29 talked with Melissa Madura, a witch based in Brooklyn, about what witchcraft means to her. Here's her response.
When I think of what witchcraft means to me, it does stem from this autonomous female warrior who just lives by her own means, who takes care of herself by any means necessary and doesn't ask anyone for permission.
No permission, but she gets right down into it. I mean, it's not just an attitude. She's got candles and oils. Here's more from Melissa.
When I talk about magic and witchcraft, what I'm talking about is, like, I will use, like, candles and oils and things, or I will anoint my phone to get a Tinder date. I will, like, make, like, a love attraction oil, and then I'll, like, anoint my phone with it, and I'll swipe. And we'll see who comes through.
I will anoint my phone to get a Tinder date. All right, we're really into it right there. With us today, Alice Hoffman, best-selling novelist of author of Practical Magic. Of course, the big 1998 film was that. A prequel just out, The Rules of Magic, getting a lot of attention right now. She's with me in the studio. And Alice, it's great to have you here.
Hi, thank you.
Constance Grady, culture writer for Vox, is with us from New York. Laurel Zwistler is with us. Look for her book coming out soon, Religious Feminist Activist Cosmologies of Interconnection. She looks at the anthropology of religion and feminist theory. We have lots of callers lined up for all three of you. Sharon in Annapolis, Maryland. Sharon, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm in my early 60s.
Okay.
And this is actually a second huge resurgence of Wicca and witchcraft.
I guess I just missed the whole train, Sharon. Fill me in.
Well, the song by the Eagles, Witchy Woman, and all of that, back in the 60s.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Women at that time were heavily into protesting feminism and whatnot. Therefore, it was the hippies who brought back the modern witch.
Okay.
And all candles and spells aside, I myself, I did a speech when I was only in the 12th grade on the history of Wicca and Wiccan. I'm a Christian. However, I want to make one more point, and that is that besides what the ladies have been talking about, there are some huge foundation bricks to Wicca and whatnot, such as it is steeped in the belief in nature. It is steeped in the belief of astrology, and it is steeped also in femininity. And all of the things that have been mentioned, and all of those things are universally appealing. There is so much more to witchcraft, or not the craft, but the religion, or even some of the beliefs that I find extremely appealing, such as nature being one of the foundation bricks. The old saying of sunshine for happiness, bird song for mirth. One's closer to God's heart in a garden than anywhere else on earth. And nature is a big part of witchcraft, as are all of the other really interesting and pretty far out there things that some of us think of witchcraft as being, people sitting around doing spells and whatnot. But that's all a practice of the actual religion. If we go into a Catholic church, we see a priest coming down the aisle with the incense,
yeah,
candles lit. All the different religions have different little ceremonies and whatnot that seem odd. It's no different with, you know, Wiccans. And like I said, if anyone ever even looks up astrology other than the very superficial and basically silly daily horoscope, if you pick up a true astrologer's book and read about your sun sign, and there'll be many, many pages on your particular sun sign, I think that you'll be very strangely surprised if you compare that to, say, your wife, your friend, family, other member, and read about it.
Sharon, we've got it. I mean, we've got a taste of it. We get the vibe, certainly, and you remind us, yes, that I guess you're right. There have been waves here. I appreciate your call. Alice, you've written so compellingly about this with a kind of a light touch, but at the same time, an awareness of all the kinds of things that Sharon's talking about there. What is it to your mind, beyond escape from patriarchy, mm-hmm, which that's a huge beyond, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also a kind of visceral texture to this way of relating to the world, the earth, the straw.
Yeah.
Describe the appeal. Not that I don't kind of just get it implicitly, but I'd love to hear you describe it.
Well, I think that caller really had it right on. I think it's a lot about sisterhood. It's a lot about healing. There's, mm-hmm, it's really like green witchery, green magic.
Did you
herbs,
say grain?
Green.
Green. Green. Okay, yeah, just the earthiness.
Earthiness,
of it.
The, mm-hmm, garden magic.
Yep.
And, you know, for me, my book, The Rules of Magic, takes place in the 60s. And it was interesting to hear her talk about, mm-hmm, that, because that was a time when people were really experimenting with different kinds of consciousness, and, mm-hmm, that the women's movement kind of reappeared. And I think it was a really important time that I think this time echoes.
Constance, you're listening and thinking about younger women you've written about quite a lot and their embrace of this. Do you see a new turn of the screw of the evolution of this in the way, let's say, Lord and her age cohort are drawn to witchiness?
I think one of the things that's really interesting about the current witch movement is there's a sort of semi-ironic turn to it. A lot of it is parodying something like self-care culture. You know, not very good piece of advice that sometimes people give out under the guise of self-care is, mm-hmm, if you're feeling anxious, relax and take a nice hot bath.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone who is playing around with which imagery might respond, to cure my anxiety disorder, I will bathe in the blood of virgins. It's sort of this idea that there, you can't fix everything, you can't destroy everything that's giving you pain, but you can play around with the fantasy of it. And the witch fantasy offers you a way to do that while also lampshading how implausible it is and how, mm-hmm, sort of silly and fun it can be.
Mm-hmm. All at the same time. Tammy in Nashville. Tammy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling to just talk about, I think that there's a cross-cultural movement going on with what I say, brujería. So,
brujería, what is it?
I get brujería, so it's kind of like witchcraft. And so I know, like, for Chicanas, Mexican-Americans, mm-hmm, I think that we're using what used to be an insult, like bruja, mm-hmm, as empowerment. And so now bruja, like some other insults that people in, you know, like Latinos and Chicanos would hurl at women, like chingona or bruja, have come to mean that they've been insults. But now I think women who feel empowered and our feminists are taking those insults and thinking of them as empowerment statements.
Interesting. So there, too, right across ethnic lines or cultural lines, you feel some echo or answer to this.
Yeah, and there's been some marketing, too. Like, so I've seen a lot of shirts like that say bad and bruja as advertisements. And so I think that even within the Chicano and Latino community, for women, bruja is becoming a term of being a nonconformist, mm-hmm. and being powerful in a society that has, you know, I think society has long disapproved of witches in general. And so I feel like it's a way of women taking back that insult to make it more of a compliment.
No, I hear it loud and clear, Tammy, and it's very much in line with what we're hearing right across the board here. I appreciate your call from Nashville. Laurel, you're listening to all this, and you've got this great awareness of how this has played out over time. What do you see in the if there's a new wave or evolution of this cultural understanding of what's embedded here right now? How would you describe it? What's the latest face of witchiness we're looking at?
Yeah. Well, I think if we're thinking of a witch identity as always kind of signaling alterity, that means it's going to take on specific forms given what looks mainstream, right? If you're rejecting sort of mainline values, that rejection is going to take on new forms. And I think at its heart, when women embrace identities like witch or like bruja, they're essentially saying, you know, I tried to play by your rules, and I'm giving up. I'm opting out. I'm going to replace male-defined mainstream visions of femininity with my own. I'm going to be a woman who's defining for herself what women are. And I think that's part of why we get such a gamut of visions of what an empowered witch can look like. Mm-hmm. We've got women who emphasize more sort of historically religiously traditional notions of webs of interconnection and nature. We've got younger women who are really playing with the idea that they're going to flip around the pinup dream girl, right? And sort of take those aspects that have always been seen as scary or detrimental in women and instead celebrate them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of why witch can mean so many things and can come with so many aesthetics, is because there are so many pieces of contemporary culture that are hard for women to flourish in. And that means in a practical way that witch can mean a lot of things, and a lot of different women can be witchy. And that's part of why we get such a diversity in the images.
Sheila in East Aurora, New York. Sheila, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. You mentioned earlier, do we find this trend frightening or freaky or scary?
Or appealing,
Pardon?
Or appealing, yes, the whole range.
Yeah, I'm a middle-aged woman, and I am going to say that I think politically the Women's March and Hillary herself, the pussy hat, embracing your inner, can I say the word that rhymes with witch on the air?
Well, I think we've got it. I think we know right where you are.
Okay. Yeah. Embracing that inner person, is very welcoming. I told my daughter the other day, if somebody calls you that, embrace it, because what they're doing is they're, calling out your strengths. And, you know, witches were historically persecuted for their power, which going back, you know, I know the other guests have talked about that, but our femininity, just the fact that we are so powerful that we can give birth, is a threat to men, and it's just digressed from there. But I think our natural powers in terms of women, our brains, our intuition, our capacity to nurture and give birth. And I think in terms of like the ugly image of the witch and in different cultures that'd be called the crone, I think there comes a point in your life where you reject society's society sort of stamp on you that your looks are what matter. And so I think that there's almost an embracing of the hag look, the crone look. Just saying, sure, you know,
because we age. Yeah, Sheila, your phone is getting weak on us there, but your ideas are not, and I really appreciate you calling in on that. We're out of time. I've got one more. Alice, let me put it to you. Jim, and I can't get to him. It's just too late. And Charlotte says, if witchcraft is destroying the patriarchal structure, what's the role for men in witchcraft?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think the role for men is always really the same, to be human. And to allow women to be human too, and the whole idea is really to be equal. So I think that's really the role for men, and really I think what witchery is just trying to humanize things. And I love the idea of what I loved your last caller, and the whole idea that young women are wearing shirts that say "nasty woman." I think is part of this whole witch movement.
Saying, I'm a whole person.
I'm a whole person.
Don't expect this just to be peaches and cream. I'm the whole thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you get the feeling, Constance, that, I don't know, society now can live with this? Or do we have a little flaring up of witchiness and soon, I don't know, the down comes the hangman's noose? Or historically, it hasn't been pretty.
Yeah, historically, whenever there's a big feminist movement, it's quickly followed by a backlash. You know, after the 60s and 70s comes the 80s. It would be nice if that didn't happen this time, but, you know, we'll see shortly what happens.
Laurel, witchiness forever, or is it always cyclical?
I think cyclical is the answer. It comes back when we need it.
Wow. Well, Me Too's big right now. Maybe right now there's a need.
Absolutely.
And there it is. Laura Zwistler, it's been terrific talking with you. Please come and visit us again from Central Michigan University. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Constance Grady at Vox, you're terrific. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Alice Hoffman, author of Practical Magic and now The Rules of Magic. Wonderful to spend some time with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
We go out with Fleetwood Mac and Stevie Nicks. She said this song was about a Welsh witch. All right. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.